Now, ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. Someone once said that the world stands aside to make way for the man who knows where he's going. And so tonight it gives me great pleasure to make way for a man who knows what he's talking about. Harry Von Zell.
Don't ever neglect the cold. At the very first sign of a cold, get after it immediately with the faster help of what's the name?
Fred Allen, remember?
No. The name of the... I'm awfully sorry, that eagle has upset me. I can't remember the name of what it is that helps fight cold faster. It slipped my mind.
Well, it'll come to you. Go ahead, Harry.
Well, yes, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, this famous product acts very quickly, yet it's exceptionally gentle. And since the progress of a cold is very fast, the greater speed of what it is I'm talking about is especially important in fighting your cold. And that's not all. This, the name will come to me in a minute. It also helps nature counteract the acidity that so often accompanies a cold. And ladies and gentlemen, you can check these facts with your own doctor.
You'd better check the name, too, ladies and gentlemen.
Fred, you know what I'm talking about.
Why, certainly, Harry. You're talking about America's outstanding saline laxative.
That's it, Fred. And the name is...
The name is, so many physicians recommend it.
Yes. And it helps fight colds faster. But what is the name?
Well, here's a pretty to-do. Wait, Harry. There must be somebody around here who knows. If there is, would you please tell us confidentially? That's it. Sal Hepatica. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
No wonder they couldn't remember a name like that. And, of course, if you're talking about a laxative, you got to add a little humor into that. That's an example of a little bit of a humorous commercial from the old radio days with Fred Allen. And the reason why we're doing that is we have a...
where's my book, Greg? I lost it.
The book.
A word from our sponsor.
What's the name of it?
A word from our sponsor, Admin Advertising in the Golden Age of Radio. Its author, Cynthia Myers, joins us this morning. Cynthia, thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
This book, I looked at it, it's very academic, as I would say. It has kind of a, you know, it's a book that includes footnotes and a lot of information on this. So there's some serious research that went into a book like this. Tell me what drew you to actually want to kind of look back at the advertising age, golden age of radio, and the impact of the two on each other?
Well, early radio was like the internet of today. It was a new technology, and people were trying to figure out how to make it work. And the advertising industry actually helped create radio as a commercial entertainment medium. And what I learned by going to the archives was that they actually invented all sorts of programs, like soap operas were invented by advertising agencies. And they were trying to come up with ways of getting audiences interested. And what we just heard was the comedian Fred Allen integrating an ad into his comedy show, and they were making fun of regular hard sell advertising by pretending to forget the name of the product, which was the sponsor of his show.
And it's one of those things where, I guess, if it draws people's attention, they're still listening. They're not tuned out, as what many times commercials are looked upon for people who are enjoying radio or any other kind of television, for example, too.
Exactly. It was a brilliant strategy. This is a soft sell strategy to use humor. And it actually, everybody who was listening to the show already knew that the sponsor was Sal Hepatica, because one product would be the sponsor for the entire show for a whole season. So it actually put the name in people's minds without actually telling them the name. But a lot of radio advertising was very repetitive, and it depended on hard sell advertising. And so a lot of soap operas were actually very repetitive also, because they were actually applying an ad strategy to the actual program. The advertisers and ad agencies controlled, created, produced, financed the whole program. So the program was really an advertisement.
Now, did the audience, were they aware of this? What did the government think about this? I mean, there's probably a lot of people looking at this wondering, shouldn't we tell people that they're being manipulated or they're being sold something and not just entertained? I mean, didn't that play a part at some point within all of this?
Well, actually, the government wanted radio to be a commercial medium. And initially, people like Herbert Hoover thought it should be a medium of indirect advertising. And so advertisers would sponsor like a program of music, and the only way you would know that they sponsored it was that they would name it. Like the Clico Club Eskimos was sponsored by Clico Club Ginger Ale. But eventually, the Depression came along in the 30s, and advertisers wanted to sell more directly to audiences. And because of the First Amendment, the government does not tell media what they can and cannot do. But they did abridge the First Amendment rights slightly of radio stations. They're supposed to serve the public interest. But that soon became interpreted as entertaining the public. So advertisers who provided entertaining programming were serving the public interest.
Would radio have survived the way we know it today if not for the advertising agencies?
No, because there was no political interest in funding radio programming in the 20s and 30s. And it's only later in the 50s and 60s that we even get public broadcasting at all. But before that, the government wanted radio to be self-financing. And the only way broadcasters could afford to put on programs was to get advertisers to help pay for them. And through the 30s and 40s, advertisers did everything. And it's not until television comes along, when it's just too expensive for one advertiser to produce a whole show, that the networks took control over programs and stations took control over programs, and then they just started selling short pieces of time to advertisers. But up until the 1950s, advertisers would buy a whole hour, and then they would control that whole hour. And everybody knew, because it was called the, you know, Kraft Music Hall or the Lux Radio Theater. Everybody knew exactly who was paying for the program.
Cynthia, obviously you did a lot of research on this, lots of different sources. In your travels, did you come upon anything that really caught your attention that you didn't know about or you were really caught by surprise?
Well, I guess I was caught by surprise that advertising agencies were the actual production companies of programs. I didn't realize that. I knew they were involved. But in the archives, I learned that they were writing the scripts, they were choosing the talent, they were selecting the time, they were negotiating with the networks. So they were kind of the creators of entertainment in the 30s and 40s. Because today, after television came along, advertising agencies just created the commercials. And then TV studios and movie studios took over programming. But today, people are moving back to that. Ad agencies are now getting involved in branded entertainment again. Advertisers are now integrating their products into programs. They're now doing cast commercials with members of sitcoms, just like they used to do in the golden age of radio. And this is all because digital media is making advertisers having to work harder to get their message across to audiences.
We're talking today with Cynthia Myers. The book is A Word from Our Sponsors, Ad Men, Advertising in the Golden Age of Radio. Even though this is really about radio, this is almost about today. I was watching a podcast that you had done, or a little bit of a presentation indicating you stated the fact that what if you had a medium that people invented and everyone could get for free, but you couldn't charge the people who were receiving all this content? How would you do that? And you kind of look at that as the way the internet is going, but that's really what radio was like back in the 20s. So there is kind of a correlation, and I guess we could learn from that pastime.
Yeah, well, I hope so. And actually, Jack Schaefer at Reuters just wrote something about my book saying that he, by learning about the early stages of radio, he felt like he was learning a lot about what was going on today. And yes, a big part of it was this fascinating new technology where people could simultaneously hear things from far away, but nobody really knew how to make money from it. And at first, they just made money from it by selling the radio sets, but then everybody bought a set. And then there was this problem of how do you finance the programming when you can't charge the audience for it. So I think there are a lot of parallels, and I think advertisers in particular are going back to a lot of those strategies of financing their own programming, integrating their brands into programming. I mean, we're going to see more and more of this as we go forward.
Well, I find it interesting, and it seems a lot to be with car companies. I'll be watching a show, and they'll give you what they call like the beauty shot of the car as the character drives up into this. And it's sort of subtle, yet you get to see a brand. There was a period of time in my lifetime with television where they would have these fake beer cans or this product wouldn't be there. In other words, everything was so generic The people lived in a land that didn't have products that I had. Nowadays, they're using the same things I have. So I guess it's kind of a, it kind of comes full circle in how people are perceiving this.
Well, right. When several decades ago, actually, the production company, like somebody was making a TV show, they had to pay the product to use the product in the show. So, for example, when Steven Spielberg made E.T., Extraterrestrial, he wanted to use M&M's, but M&M's wanted to charge him money to use their product. And so Reese's Pieces agreed to let him use it for free. So what we have now is completely the opposite. Now advertisers are paying lots of money to integrate their brands into programs, and a lot of production companies depend on brand integration to help finance their shows.
Many shows we would not have had because of this, right? I mean, it seems like everything that you mentioned with those names of those shows that had an advertiser, if it wasn't for those advertisers, chances are these shows, these variety shows, these people wouldn't have their shows.
Well, of course not. And the sponsors were the ones, the advertisers and ad agencies were the ones who would choose the talent. And so sometimes there was a little bit of conflict, you know, the star wanted to do things one way and the sponsor wanted to make sure that the ad message got through. That's true for all commercial media. And the 60s through today, the fact that the programs are separate from the commercials, it still means the advertisers are financing their shows. The advertisers are still choosing programs to place their commercials in, and that's how networks make their money. What has changed is who controls the program. And once television started, the networks on television started controlling the programs. And radio stations, their program directors started controlling the programs, not the advertisers. So the advertisers actually were happy to give up program control because it was a lot of work, a lot of effort, and a lot of risk. And so the risk was shifted over to the stations and the networks, who then sold little bits of time to advertisers. And now we're coming back around to this older system again, where the advertisers are so anxious to reach audiences that they're asking networks, no, we want to have more say in the program. We want to put our products in there. But very few programs are actually labeled with the name of the advertiser, unlike in the radio days where everybody knew Kraft Music Hall was financed by Kraft Cheese.
See a lot of these changes or principles being applied to social media as well today? Or what do you think the future holds?
Well, I think what's going to happen is that advertisers and ad agencies are going to be trying everything under the sun. Right now, a lot of advertisers are working very hard in social media, but I went to a conference recently, and there's a feeling that social media is still too difficult to really use effectively, that it's lightning in a bottle to actually have a really good social media campaign. So it'll be very interesting for me to see. But one of the things that is happening is that branded entertainment is moving into social media. So, for example, AT&T produced a teen reality show, and instead of putting it on television, they put it on YouTube and Tumblr and Twitter. And so if you were following the show on any of those platforms, you could see episodes, you know, every few days an episode would come up, and it was in real time. But I think much more experimentation like that is coming.
The book is called A Word from Our Sponsor, Admin, Advertising, and the Golden Age of Radio. Have you put together a class curriculum at school so that the kids can buy this textbook, in a sense, and take that and become a, you know, learn from what you've discovered?
Well, I know that some professors are using it in their classes. It's good for media classes and advertising classes and also just American history classes, because the book is also about, you know, several decades of American culture and who was behind the creation of what was the popular culture of the day.
Yeah.
But I think even people who are casually interested in things like radio or advertising or the 30s and 40s or the great comedians of the day like Jack Benny and Fred Allen would find some interesting, fun things in there. If you're interested in soap operas, I explain how they were invented by an ad agency.
So many things that we have sort of take for granted had their start during that time when they were looking for a way, as they say, to sell soap is what it basically amounted to for the people. Again, the book is called A Word from Our Sponsor. Our guest today, Cynthia Myers. Thanks for sharing the time with us. We appreciate all that you've done.
Thanks for having me.
All right.